Welcome to Addiction to Recovery. Our purpose and passion is to bring you not only the science of addiction,
but also the patient perspective and how the two relate. Welcome back, everyone. Do another episode of Addiction to Recovery. I get Heather to laugh every time.
Sounded so corny.
I know. I'm Josh Solom. I'm a certified peer recovery specialist, and I'm joined by Dr. Heather Bell, who is addiction. I never say it right. How do you say it?
I usually just say a family and addiction physician.
There you go. That sounds very professional and spot on. That's what she does. And that's what she's good at. So we have, for any of you who are new listeners, welcome. And if you have not, and you're a current listener, and you have not went on and given us a thumbs up or liked us, given us a rating, we'd really appreciate that. And if you're new, this is a podcast that takes both perspectives of addiction, the medical side and then the person that uses side and the person in recovery side.
How about used?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Oops. So Anyway, we are, Heather, you want to say anything?
Yeah, well, I was just going to introduce our guests before you
there
keep
you
rambling,
go.
But
there you go.
If you have any questions or feedback or you want to be on this crazy show or, we would love to get questions from listeners and then we can address like on another episode. But I will apologize because I do have one sitting in my in basket, like an email we got that I will get to, I promise, our doctor friend in Wisconsin.
Oh.
So anyway,
my doctor friend in Wisconsin.
You can email us at addiction2recoverypodcast@gmail.com, and that's the same addiction with the number 2 podcast recovery or pod.
Addiction to recovery podcast.
Okay. Anyway, so today we have Brian back. So if you haven't listened to Brian's previous episodes, I will guide you back to those because I think
They're important,
and there's such great buildup, and I think to really grasp, especially what we're going to talk about in this episode, it's phenomenal regardless, so you could start listening here, but it's even more phenomenal when you listen to the rest of the story.
Right.
So I'm going to go back.
And it could go out of order, they could, but we don't want to discourage anybody from listening to this one. If you don't want to go back, listen to this one, and then you will want to go back.
You don't have to scroll back super far. So it's episode 40. Episode 43
and 50
and episode 50. So,
and Brian, you're now the most visited guest that we've had.
Aww.
Fourth time. So congratulations.
Well, it's a privilege and an honor.
You're going to get a pen for this.
Did you say a pen?
A pen.
Oh, should give him a pen. He probably already got one.
I don't know. Maybe not. Pens or not, but.
Anyway,
we'll
Brian.
Give you a pen and a sticker.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, welcome back.
Yeah.
Oh man, we haven't taped one of these in a while, you can tell. So, Brian, as anybody who's listened to your last episode is dying to know, because you left us off, you've been really good about leaving us at cliffhangers, which I love for the listeners, that I do not love for myself. So, at the end of the last episode, things were going well, turning things around. You told the story of your most remarkable moment where, a good friend and dealer stopped you. Like,
I forgot about that.
On a high risk area and a high risk moment and nobody else around, and you,
the deal of a lifetime.
Exactly. And you bounced and went to a meeting where you were already heading to. So anyway, again, you guys got to go listen to that episode. But you left us off with the fact that your wife was in drug court and you guys were doing well. Your kids, were placed with family, but you just gotten your younger one back. Or were they all back?
I thought it was just
the youngest, the 2-year-old.
But you were in your house right now, right?
Yep.
Yeah. What was it? The 33rd attempt? 34th attempt?
Yes. 36 times. And the 36 times we got told yes. Yeah.
But you left us off with your wife's probation officer coming over and then your wife saying, do you want the good news or your now wife saying, do you want the good news or the bad news?
Yes. And just to clarify, at this time, we do have all of the kids back in the house now.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Because I remember that the probation officer would always take time to check in with the kids too. And I thought that was important. It was important to me.
For sure.
And so probation officer, obviously I had built a relationship with her as well, because she was stopping by the house on a regular basis. So when she came in that particular evening and asked for Mandy to take a drug test, and she says, "Well, I got some news for you too. Do you want the good news first or the bad news?" And I'm just used to bad news, so I was like, "Hit me with the bad news." And she said, "The bad news is I need to get a drug test from you too." And I was like, "I take three a week. Like, what is it, man?
You're like,
what's
that's
one
the
more?
Good news."
Yeah, I'm like, "Well, come on." And I said, "Well, all right, tell me what the good news is." And she said, "The good news is that the drug court team met and said it makes sense to have you in drug court as well." And I remember in that moment, like I feel it right now, I was planning on going to prison. Mm-hmm. I had came to peace with the fact of going to prison because I had gotten to a spot spiritually that said, it's not man sending me to prison. It's God. And if God is sending me to prison, it's for something. It's to do something. It's to learn something. It's to carry out a mission. And it'd be his will. And I want to be obedient to that. And so when I finally had peace over that, all of a sudden, it's when real things begin to shift. And so when she shared that with me, it was just like a lightning bolt and a relief and excitement and optimism. And I said, "Well, I can give you that test right now." Let's do it.
You're like, "Do you want to watch?"
Yes, here we go.
I'll do it right on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, I gave that sample, and it was like a spark of hope, you know, because it's like series of these spiritual, supernatural, second chance, life-giving, hope-giving experiences. Bam, bam, bam. And it wasn't long after I began in drug court, and for those of you that aren't familiar, drug court was exactly what I needed because I needed to learn how to live life on a regular basis.
Brian, can you explain the difference between drug court and probation?
Yeah, so drug court is like super intensive. So obviously I was on probation as well as part of my conditions, but drug court has four phases, at least the program that I went through. Phase one is very intensive. You have a call. Anytime you leave the house, you call a message line and let them know where you're going, the time, the date, the address. And when you arrive at that location, the same thing, time, date, how long you plan on staying there. But it also gave you curfews. Phase one also required that you attended so many meetings, AA and AA meetings per week. And that wasn't a problem for us because I was already in competition with myself to try to get to the meeting and make the coffee and build these connections. And then each week we'd have court in front of the judge. And what was really great is that as a community, it became a community where we all acknowledged our clean time. We all acknowledged our struggles and we all acknowledged our wins and successes. And in front of the judge, we declared our clean days, how many days clean we have, and what we're working on, what we're struggling with. And then the community would celebrate. And then we would also mourn too when somebody had a slip and we got to see what that looked like too. And I didn't have one of those after once I was in drug court.
Can I ask a quick question about that? So when you were in front of the judge, did your probation officers give updates as well, like in front of you, or did the judge kind of go through those reports, or what was involved in terms of that?
So what? The probation officer didn't make any comments. The only time the probation officer or any of the other drug court team made a comment was when there was a phase change or we were being nominated for a phase change.
Okay.
And And then there would be different assignments involved with that as well.
Because the reason I'm asking is because, you know, sometimes hearing that public declaration or public statement of, yeah, Brian's doing really well, he's doing all these things. When someone says it about you, sometimes it feels even more validating than you just to get in there and say, I'm doing these things.
That came from the judge.
Okay, good.
Judge Moss, who's no longer with us. But he was a special person who had a special impact on my life. Because every time I was in front of a judge before, it was not, it wasn't an enjoyable experience, right?
All the
stress and trauma that's involved just walking into those buildings. And this changed that. But it also changed the other part of humanizing law enforcement. And so, yeah, that was my drug court entrance and learning how to live on, as a contributing member of society as well.
How many phases are in the drug court that you had to go through?
Four phases.
Okay.
So generally about 18 months, I think I was, 2.5 years or something like that I was in it.
Wow.
So I asked, I had this bright idea to ask, isn't it about time I should be graduating?
Yeah. Don't we all do that though? You know, like, especially like outpatient. Shouldn't I be graduating?
I think I got my hours in. Yeah, it was not a smart idea.
They're about 8 months a phase, basically.
Yeah, it could be longer or shorter for both, depending on what's going on in your life.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so you get the good news that day, and tell us what happens after that.
Yeah, so it gave me this new spark of hope. I'm going to meetings. I'm working with a peer specialist, he's speaking life into me. I'm attending church and I started doing community service at the church that I'm a part of today. And we could have done community service anywhere. I could have found a shortcut to do it, but I had this feeling that if I surrounded myself with, and actually somebody said, show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
I remember you telling me that at Teen Challenge, actually.
And I said, okay, so if I want to grow, I need to be around people that can challenge me to grow. And if I'm at church, I wanted to build a relationship with the pastors. And I felt good every time I went to church. And I thought, well, if I can give back in this in a capacity in this location, it will help all the way around in my journey.
For sure.
And it definitely did. And so as I'm working with my peer specialist, he says, you know, Brian, he said, I think you should go through the training that I went through to become a peer specialist. And then during this time, like I shared, I'm on disability. I'm still living underneath a bunch of labels that I've placed on myself and that I believe society's placed on me. And one of those is I'm disabled. I can't work. And I said, well, I can't. Why would I take this training? I said, it's not like I can go to work. I'm disabled. And my peer said, well, you know what? If it's not going to work, then it will help you in your recovery. And I thought, okay, you got me. He had an answer for everything, just so you know.
I know I'm in it, and I agree.
Yeah, so he ended up helping me get signed up for it. It was run through one of the mental health providers in town, Northern Pines, just for a little shout-out to them. And while I was in this training, all of a sudden I started to have a shift inside. And my classmates started to say, "Wow, you're like a natural at this. Like, you're really good at this." And I'm like, "Well, you know what? It actually feels good too." And all of a sudden, I started to think, maybe all those years that I had marked off as wasted and lost, maybe they weren't. Maybe, just maybe, they can be used instead to help other people. And I ended up graduating the program. I ended up passing the certification test to the Minnesota MCB or the Minnesota
Certification Board,
yep.
What year was that?
Oh, must be 16.
17, 16?
No, 16, okay. Yep. And so right away, Northern Pines, after they gave me my results of the test, they said, we'd like to set up an interview with you if you'd fill out an application. And I said, well, hold on a minute here. I'm disabled. I can't work. I came through this training for my recovery. And they said, well, why don't you think about it? And we're going to give you a call in a day or two. And so I thought, well, you know, it wouldn't hurt just to fill out the application just to see what it's like and then maybe go for an interview to see what that's like. And so I did. And as soon as I was done with the interview, they were like, well, we'd like to hire you. Well, I didn't have my driver's license. I still needed to get that sorted out. But I was just like, you know what? I think this is all moving way too fast. Well, now fast forward. That was in the beginning of the week. Fast forward to Sunday. I'm at church. And a representative from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge comes up to me and said, yeah, I heard you're going to be going back into the workforce. And we'd like you to come fill out an application and do an interview. And I said, number one, I never told a soul I was even going to work because I haven't even told myself that. So sure. I don't know who's giving you the information, but it's inaccurate. And they kept at it. And I said, hey, well, here's the deal. I'll fill out an application. I'll come in for an interview to hear what it's about. And not even knowing that God was in the middle of doing work in me. Now, after that sermon on Sunday, that sermon was talking about the man of the house or the father of the house needs to be demonstrating to his kids that that you work and earn and provide for your family. Well, under some of these labels that I had, I struggled with that too because I got this check coming. I'm on disability. I'm not working. How does that demonstrate to my kids that I'm providing for them? And so on Monday of the next day, I'm taking steps down, walking one step at a time because I didn't have feeling in my legs because of my back injury. And my son Isaiah comes running around me. He buzzes around me on the staircase. He opens the front door. I hear him flip the mailbox open, flip it shut. And he comes back in. He looks at me because I'm still coming down the stairs. And he said, Dad, did the check get here yet? And I'm like, what the heck check are you waiting for, man? He's like, I don't know. Whatever check comes every month. And I had this piercing, like, just like almost time froze. And I ran through this. The sermon was like speaking to me in real life. And because I asked the question, what am I teaching my kids? And my son provided me with that answer in that moment. And all of a sudden, in that same moment, I started getting this burning in my hips. It's like a hot burning sensation in my hips. And then it went down my legs all the way down to my feet. And then it changed from burning to tingling. And when the tingling finally stopped, I have feeling back in my legs. And I yelled to my wife and I said, Mandy, you're never going to guess what just happened. And she's like, what? I said, I got my feeling back in my legs. These are the steps that just happened. Like I got goosebumps right now. These are the things that just happened. When Isaiah went out and checked the mail, came in, I had this experience that just happened on the staircase just now. And I literally said, watch. And I come running down the stairs. And I'm like kind of doing a little dance and she's like, I got to back up a little bit. When I realized that I had the feeling back in my legs, I had this inner thought and the inner thought was, now why can't you work?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, holy buckets, man. What am I going to say? No. So I ran downstairs. I do this little dance in front of my wife and she says, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I guess I'm going to work. And he's like, where are you going to go? And I said, well, I said, since God seems to be running this show, I said, whoever calls me next, I'll just take that as a sign. Hmm. Within the hour, Bo from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge calls and says, have you had enough time to make a decision? And I said, yes, I have. I'll be coming to work for you guys.
That's amazing.
He was just like, yeah.
Do you know crazy. What date that was? Just curious if like that date is ingrained in your brain forever.
It's not ingrained in my brain, but it is in a journal. I could go back and find it.
Do you have a general idea? Was like month, day, or was it still in 2016? Or was it soon after you got certified?
It was in 2016.
Okay.
That's when I started working there. It was more towards the fall.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. So, it would have been right before, all this stuff would have happened right before school started because the kids weren't in school. Because Monday they was checking the mail during the day.
Right,
so,
So now you've gone through the training, but you really haven't done any work with anybody, right? I mean, you're not a sponsor at this point. You're more like a sponsee. You're just kind of going through it. What was that like? I mean, all of a sudden you're just thrown into the fire. And I know what Teen Challenge Short Term is. I've been there, and it's wild. You know, yeah. You get people that are coming in there that, and it goes with any treatment center really, but I'm just comparing it to the long-term program because that's right. a little more peaceful. People have calmed down by then. But how did you, first of all, what was it like? And then how did you respond? Did you know?
Well, there was a lot of things that we had to consider. Number one, by going back to work, I would be jeopardizing my disability. They have something that's called a ticket to work.
Yeah.
So you get 7 tickets or 9 tickets. I don't even remember now because once I realized that I wasn't going to stay on it. But so I started and I had to work under a certain number of hours. Well, the first month I burned that ticket up because I ended up working. Well, finally, I worked 16 days in a row or something like that. I was eating it up. I was loving it.
Yeah.
And when I got there, you know, and I there was people there that I knew that made it feel kind of like home, kind of like almost like, they were friends of mine, people that I knew, one guy that I was in drug court with, another guy that I'd gone through treatment with, and they were working there. And so they showed me the ropes. I remember chasing a guy down that left. I think it was my first month, and guy says, "Nope, I'm done, I'm leaving." And he's going, walking down the road. I tried to talk to him. And then finally I ran back into the center to tell him, "Hey, this guy's leaving." And then I turned around and ran back out of the office and I'm trying to chase him down, and the guy gets into a vehicle, and so I'm running back. I'm going to get in my car, and they said, "Just stop, just settle down. We don't chase them down. We can pray for them."
Right.
And so there's a lot of learning that went into it, but along the way, I started to discover that you know I didn't waste those years. You see, anyone that's in recovery or anyone that's in active use that thinks that they'll never have anything to offer because they've wasted their life, I want to challenge that today. And I want to say that those experiences and the experiences you're experiencing right now are the exact key to somebody else's hope, somebody else's direction or roadmap to their future of success and hope. And so I discovered that each person that needed something while I was in that first few months at Teen Challenge working, that I had an answer based off of an experience and getting confirmation from other staff members, from clients, from leadership, I really started to kind of develop inside me. And I started just, instead of just showing up and doing the basic, you know, what is required of me, I started to make the position my own. And so I started, what can I do while these men are in some of the most important times of their life? Status quo isn't okay.
Right.
What more can I do? And so I started having more motivational things. I continued to go outside of my job and look for opportunities to grow and learn. So going to motivational retreats and different presenters and conferences and learning and growing my toolbox so that I had as much as I could to invest in those that were that I had the honor of working alongside. And eventually I was moved into the charge staff position, and where I began to try to cultivate a culture among my peers that it isn't status quo. That when we show up, it's somebody's life. And ultimately, it's somebody's eternity, too. Mm-hmm. And so really just taking it to the next level. And so the next big thing that happened in that time period is my daughter was in seventh grade. She's now graduated from school. A couple years ago, she graduated. But she was in seventh grade, and she shared. Her health instructor said, if any of your parents can come in and be guest speakers to talk about any of the lessons that we have throughout the year, we would love to hear what they have to offer, and maybe they can come in and be guest speakers. Well, my daughter raised her hand and she said, my dad can come in and talk about drugs.
So can I just point something out to people with that statement right there? Because you said that and it made me think of my son, because I did that last year in their health class as well. As a seventh grader, and that's a big deal. I mean, your daughter and kids had been through a lot with you guys, and you know, yes, there's obviously, I mean, obviously a lot of positives in a short time, but for her to then raise her hand and say, hey, my dad can come in and do this. I mean, what did that do for you? Like, did the amount of forgiveness in that action and just the amount of love, like, how did that idea fill you?
Oh man, I'm just telling you, it was a catapulting. It was a catapulting part of my life. So what I should also share, because I forgot some important background information. When my wife and I got arrested and we got out of jail, we discovered that she was pregnant as well. Hmm. And so, you know, fast forward to this time period. So I have a young boy that's literally just learning how to walk, and so he would be coming with me to my first presentation to the seventh grade classroom.
Wow.
And that's where my life changed, like, exponentially. See, it didn't start right away, but I still had those labels I was living under. Each time I go into the classroom, and I didn't know that then, but I know that now because I've been doing it for 8 years. But when I went into the classroom, and after I spoke to, I'd be there all day long. I'd speak to every health class. Hmm. And spend the day at the school. And then about a week later, I get a call from the teacher, and she'd let me know that she has a bunch of thank you letters for me. And in reading one of these thank you letters, it had such a profound effect on me that I have it memorized. And I'll just read it for the listeners.
Sure.
It says, "Dear Mr. Andrews, thank you for coming in and being a guest speaker. I usually don't pay attention when guest speakers come in, but you're definitely not a regular guest speaker, I'll give you that. You're as much of a hero as a doctor, a firefighter, or a police officer for what you're trying to do for our community. I want to join you in your mission someday, and I know others will too. Thank you for serving peace in the world, Mr. Andrews. Sincerely." Mm. And I read that, and it was like the last pieces of that broken identity shattered and fell at my feet. And I had a fire that started to light up inside me for our youth. And it was literally, I read that a few days later, you know, fast forward to 2019. So I've been doing this for a while. I'm still looking around, but I ended up having this dream. And in this dream, it showed me working with the youth. And it was such a clear path that I would be partnering with all these other agencies. And it literally showed me everything that I'm doing today. And when I woke up from that dream, I woke my wife up and I said, "Something just happened to me in my sleep. I need you to," so 2018. So I said, "You need to, I've got to write this down real quick." So I wrote it all down in the journal so that I would never forget about it. And I started just to walk in that direction or be open to it. And see, I want to say that that first year, 2016, So my wife and I got married 12/12/15. So 2015, we got married. 2016, got the job. But in that same time period, in 2015, we were approached by our past social worker that said that each year the hockey team in the community sponsors a family for Christmas. And a family that's shown and demonstrated like significant transformation. Hmm. And we think that would be your family this year. And I'm like, I've had enough interaction with social services. No, thank you. And she said, "Well, let's think about it." Well, so I hung up the phone and told my wife what they wanted to do. And I said, I told them no. And she says, "Well, didn't you say that you were going to do everything different this time around?" And I'm like, "Wow, you want to have people in our house? Well, that's what we said we'd do. We would open up the curtains and we would open up the doors." And I'm like, "Oh." So I call her back and I say, "Okay." Well, so that was in the fall. They came over to our house. They met with our kids and they were asking our kids, "If you could have any gift you wanted in anything, let's hear what they are." And I was instantly, I'm like, "Hold on a minute here. My kids have been through a traumatic experience. I don't want them to believe that all these things are coming. And then Christmas time, they're like totally defeated again." Mm-hmm. And they said, "Well, this is how we do it." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, man, I'm causing harm again." and went through it. And then they came to us and they said, okay, how about you guys? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe vacuum cleaner. And they was like, and they kept saying, well, what else? What else? And then all of a sudden I'm like, well, I don't know. I need a new pair of boots. And then I still, all of a sudden I started to feel that same excitement that I seen my kids having. Like, oh, you know what? We need a new kitchen table. We need this. I'd like to get some new furniture too. And I said, all right, well, we'll be getting back to you. And when we were finished up that day, so we got married, Saturday, 12/12. And on, well, 12/11, they called and said that we'd like to deliver everything on the 13th, which would have been the day after we got married. So we got married. The next day, I'm trying to make the house look like nobody lives there. And my one son says, I think they're here. I'm like, well, how do you know what they drive? And he says, well, come and look. And I remember looking out the window, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. There was cars as far as I could see. There was trucks and with trailers and backing up to our house. And I'm like, this is, they got the wrong address. And all of a sudden, all this mob of people started walking towards our house. And there was a knock at the door. I'm just like, close the curtains. And like, they're not here for us. It was hard, right? And so we opened the door. And says, this is the Andrews family? And we're like, yeah. Can you come outside? We're from the Hockey Association, and I'm like, I go outside, and they have this like 7 foot tall Christmas sock with everybody's signatures on it. And they said, we just like to just take a minute to just express, we've been hearing about your family, what you've gone through, what you've been through, and what you're doing now, and we just want to commend you. And I'm just like, commend me for which part? For getting my kids taken away, you know? And no, the effort to get them back. And they said, we'd like to start with the big stuff first. And I'm like, the big stuff? Yeah. And they said, but we can, you know, so I'm like, what do you need help with? And they said, what we'd like you to do, just if you're okay with us coming in your house and taking care of all this stuff, that was what we'd like to do. And I'm just like, okay, stand off to the side. Next thing I know, they're hauling our couch out. They're calling our kitchen table out. They're hauling out the old beds or the kids' room, and they're bringing in all brand new stuff.
Wow.
And I'm just like, what the heck? And trying to hold together because I struggle with pride and ego, and it's what got me sick to start with, you know, and then not to feel any emotion because I was afraid of feeling that too. Mm-hmm. And then they got all the big stuff in, and I'm just like, that's enough. You know, that's enough. And they said, well, we're going to bring in the gifts now. And one family after another family after another, until our whole living room, floor to ceiling, and this is not an exaggeration. We had one little path that we couldn't sit on the furniture because there's mountains of presents.
Oh, my God.
And we had a walkway from the door to the kitchen. And I looked at my kids, and like they were ecstatic, man. And I could have never had that, made them feel like that, right? And I just looked at them and I said, just so you know, this is like winning a lottery. I said, this will only happen one time in a lifetime. And many people will never ever experience this. And they said, we know. And so they're gone. We let the kids open presents every day until Christmas. Right?
I was gonna say, how long did it take to open the presents?
We still have presents at Christmas Eve.
Wow.
And we had our own presents that we'd bought them. And our oldest child was up from college that we had started rebuilding those relationships to. And she was home for Christmas, and they were home from Christmas, and ended up expressing that we needed some candy for stockings. Not that the kids needed anything else, but
candy's so important.
Yes, right. So anyway, ended up I said, hey, when you get back, don't knock, just come in, and we're gonna go put the kids to bed. So we go upstairs and we get the kids tucked into bed, and I get into some pajamas, we'll just say that. And all of a sudden, about, I don't know, 45 minutes later, it's knock, knock, knock. And I'm like, she doesn't listen very well. And I'm like, come in. And knock, knock, knock. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So down the stairs I go, and I flip the light on, and I have that chipped diamond-shaped glass in my door. And so I'm doing the head bob to try to get an image of who's out there. I'm like, what the heck? So I crack open the door. It's Santa Claus and a bunch of elves with contractor bags. Is this the Andrews family? And I'm like, yeah. Well, we have some things for you. I said, you know, I'm going to have you just hang tight for a minute. And I ran up the stairs, and my wife says, who is it? And I said, it's Santa Claus, an elf. Man, the lights came on. This kid sprung out of bed. I'm just like, come downstairs, and in comes Santa Claus and elves, and fill our living room up all over again.
Oh, my God.
And I just, and then I, and that was it. I couldn't do it. There was brand new electronic game systems and everything else, and I just broke down. And my kids said, Dad, you said this would only happen once in a lifetime. And I said, well, you know what? I said, I'm done putting God in a box. I'm done putting God in a box. I can do whatever he wants to do. Mm-hmm. And I didn't stop there. In 2018, we were selected as a partner family for Habitat for Humanity, and we ended up getting our home a home built. And again, my kids looked at me and they kind of just said, yeah, Dad, once in a lifetime, huh?
Yeah, right.
and we received this love. And it was, you know, some people may have comments that, oh, you're always getting something for nothing. I'll tell you what, the something for nothing is very hard. It's very hard to receive something for nothing.
Yeah.
But not one person was something for nothing. It was people blessing our family.
Right.
And what,
Brian, you also didn't do nothing. And, you know, the haters might say, well, you chose to become what you did. And so you really didn't do anything because all you did was, you know, everybody can assume what the haters are going to say about this. But it wasn't nothing. You know,
That's right.
It was a lot. And you didn't just, you gave back and you went above and beyond and you proved yourself above and beyond. And shouldn't even need to prove yourself, obviously, but it wasn't for nothing.
Right, exactly. And what it did, though, is it transformed my heart. It taught me and my family about giving, that the real blessing is in giving and serving others. Time, talent, and treasure, right? Giving others, time, talent, and treasure. What do you have to offer? And it isn't about do we have time, it's about making time. And all that time is given back to us. And so in that general time frame, I got connected because of these dreams that I had. One of the dreams was me partnering with Crow Wing County, and I'm working for Teen Challenge, and they were going to do an ACES. There was an ACES presentation at a church in town, and on a Saturday, and on Saturdays we didn't travel anywhere, and because there wasn't enough staff. Well, my boss calls me and says, I want you to take some guys and bring them to the ACES presentation. I said, oh, we're not allowed to go anywhere on Saturdays. And he says, Brian, get some guys and bring them to the conference. I said, okay. And then I realized we're going to miss lunch or brunch. And so I call him back and said, we can't go. He's like, why? I said, because we'll miss brunch. He says, you can eat when you get back, Brian. And I'm like, what the heck? He's always said the opposite for the past couple of years, and now all of a sudden it's okay to go somewhere on Saturday. Huh, okay. So we get there, the place is packed. There's enough seats at one table for one for the guys that I brought, and then there was another spot at another table. I sat right next door to them. And I seen this person sitting in the spot next to me, and all of a sudden this lady comes walking up and sits down beside me, and she's like, oh, hi, how are you? I'm like, good. And she said, where do you work? I said, oh, I work at Minnesota Adult Teen Challenge. And I said, well, where do you work? She says, oh, I'm a program manager for Crow Wing County Social Services. And which was from my dream.
Right.
And I'm like, get out of here. I said, not doing it. I was arguing with the Holy Spirit. I'm not doing it. Nope, not doing it. And I kept getting nuts, and I'm like, fine, I'll do it. And so I said, you know, I've been meaning to connect with somebody over there about some ideas. I don't want to get into detail about a dream, right? So
she's going to be like, we're going to call this county on you if you start talking about these dreams.
This guy needs to get some help. And so I just said, I want to talk to you about some youth, some youth prevention stuff that I'm doing and how I want a partner to do more. And well, give me your information. And she gave me her information. And when I got back to the center that day, I sent an email saying it was a pleasure meeting you. I hope that we could set something up. Well, I figured, you know, Monday, we would I get an email Monday because it was weekend. Sunday, I get there and there's an email waiting for me. She had sent an email Saturday evening and I got it on Sunday morning asking if I could meet that Wednesday.
Wow.
And I was like, well, yeah. But just so you guys know, when I walked into that building that day, it was like I was walking right into it. It was kind of creepy almost.
Yeah.
And exciting. And then as I walked up the stairs, I walked by all these people that said, oh, hey, Brian, how have you been? Heard you doing a lot of good things. And I'm like, what the heck is? Am I in another dimension? And
normally walking into that building wasn't positive.
No, never.
Historically, no.
Never. And all of a sudden, all these people that I hadn't seen in years are making these comments. And I'm like, wow. So I get up to the office that we're meeting in, and the lady I was meeting had said, I invited one of my one of the other department leads to join us. And here, all of a sudden, she's like, here she is. And I'm like, oh, it's Brian. This is the Brian you're talking about? We had served on a coalition before in my past, and oh my goodness. Well, we go in, I said, I just got to start this off the right way. I need you guys to know why I'm here. I said, I'm here because of a dream. And I said, I hope you guys don't think I'm nutty after this conversation. But what came from that is what today is now what we know as Blade, a coalition. It was the very beginning phases of that conversation. Wasn't long after that Crow County held a kind of a community informational to gather information, and then assembly of the coalition. And I've been very much involved in that along the way. And when I say that is because it's important for me not only to have faith and belief in a power greater than myself and be obedient to what we believe he's asking us to do, but stepping out across that fear line into an area that we've never been in, right? And believing in ourselves and believing that we have something to offer. And it's important that I say that everyone has something special to offer. And then stepping across that fear line is where a lot of this magic or this exciting stuff happens.
Yeah,
and so, you know, I did that.
The thing that I can keep thinking about when you say stepping over the fear line is when I was doing my training, I mean, you should have seen the wide array of people, you know, that were stepping out of there, because you think about it, it's kind of scary when you get out of addiction. Now you're in recovery and you think about going to help others that are early on in recovery. So there was a bunch of people coming from all kinds of backgrounds. And so it is, you got to step out of your safety zone and be willing to help others. And some of that might be public speaking. Some of that might be working, you know, one-on-one with somebody. It's a beautiful thing when you see the people that lived in fear, because that's a lot of what addiction is you live in fear, and then for them to come out of it and then just step over that fear threshold.
Sometimes it's just going to that first job after getting clean and sober, right?
Yeah, right.
And breaking free. I had to break free from the labels, and I had to break free from the way I seen myself. And a lot of that came from self-work, right? Working on self and learning how to love me and learning and discovering what others could see in me. And I surrounded myself with people that would speak truth to me and speak life to me. And I challenged that along the way, you know, from the first day, you know, got clean, as I was interacting with other people, from the guys in the morning at the AA meeting, you know, he gave me something. He gave me something special, not only the buffet idea, but all these one-liners that I've kept and added to my toolbox. One of those is a problem shared is a problem cut in half. A problem kept is a problem doubled. And how much of those problems are we willing to get rid of? And then the other one is there's no comfort in the growth zone and no growth in the comfort zone. And so I really bought on to that if I really wanted to grow, I needed to challenge my comfort. And, you know, when we let the people come into the house, I challenged that comfort. When I started walking into these different arenas I challenged that comfort. When I got involved with the coalitions and volunteering and service locally and in the state, I challenged that comfort zone. And when I had that spark that came from the seventh grade health classes that said that they could see me, and not only could they see me, but they could recognize what I was trying to do.
And they wanted to do it too.
And they wanted to do it too. And everybody that knows seventh graders, because everybody's known one or currently knows one, they're going to tell you exactly what they see. And that's the best part about it, is I knew that they were speaking truth to me.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't anybody coaching them on writing. These were written and sent. And so they could write. There's been a lot of stuff that I've read. And I've had a heart that has ached, and I've had a heart that has overflowed with joy. And each of those tells me that I'm heading in the right direction, and that all the experiences, good, bad, and indifferent, have allowed me to become who I am today, which has something special to offer. But I really know that if I want to see change in my community, in my state, in my country, in my world, it's going to start with investing in the youth. And that's where my youth concept I loved working at Minnesota Dalton Teen Challenge. I loved everything about it, but I was getting comfortable. And I felt a calling on my life, a calling away from there. And I thought I'd be there forever. I loved everybody I worked with. I had meaningful and purposeful work that I was doing, right? That wasn't even work. It was like getting to live what is part of who I am every single day, every single moment. And so all of a sudden I started keeping an eye out for potential youth related work. And wouldn't you know it, about less than a year after I had that dream and got those letters and everything else, there was a posting for an executive director position for an organization called Lakes Area Restorative Justice Project, a youth diversion program. And I thought, wow, I don't know what restorative justice is, but it's youth work. Well, you know, I said I'd never be a leader again. I never wanted to be in leadership position again. But the funny part is, for the 2 years before that, my pastor had started a leadership development group where we would read books, we'd study together, and I had no desire of being in any kind of leadership, but I wanted to grow a relationship with my pastor and others in the group. And so I continued to show up and continued to challenge and grow and learn as part of my journey, not knowing that I was being prepared for a potential leadership position. So looking at this application, what the role or the job, what are the requirements? What are they looking for in a candidate? And I said, well, I have some of that, and I have none of that, but I have some of this and a little bit of dash of that, but I could probably make this fit for that. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And so our family, this is in the spring of 2020. And my family and I were taking our very first vacation as a family. And we're going out to Mount Rushmore. And so I said, you know what? I'll bring a computer with, and I'll finish my resume while we're on vacation, and I'll send it out. Well, so we're out there, and I get the resume done. It's the last day of them accepting resumes or applications, and I sent it, and I had this like sense of relief and excitement, you know, and anticipation. I went to sleep that night, woke up the next morning, and I checked my email, and there was an error message. I had added an extra letter in the email address.
Oh, no.
And I said, oh, no. Like, I messed this whole thing up, and now, as a result, I blew it. But yeah, I had a real quick
idea. Because the date had gone by.
The day before was the final day.
Yeah.
And so what I did is I had this idea that came to me, and I know where it came from, right?
Right.
Why don't you forward that email with a message saying that it didn't go through to the right email address, so it has a timestamp from the day before.
Right.
And I did. And later that week, I ended up getting an email back saying that they received my resume, and they're going to be doing virtual interviews in a week, and they'll let everybody know who they're going to have come in. So I ended up getting a first interview, and I was like, would have been totally fine with just getting an interview just to be considered.
Right.
I was happy with that, because what it did, it was changing my narrative. It was helping me to see that I had worth and value on a different level. I was continuing to grow and grow, learn, and launch. Right. And so I ended up, I was downstairs. It was a virtual interview because it was the middle of the pandemic. And while I was being interviewed, my youngest son at the time comes running into the room I was using. Hey, how's it going? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, my heart was panicking. And I'm like, hey, bud, I'm in a meeting right now. Can you go talk to mom about it? And then when I'm done, I can help you if you still need help. I didn't know that my son was going to end up helping me later on, but I ended up getting an interview, a second interview after that one. The second interview was in person. I was down to three candidates. And when I walked into that interview and sat with everybody, I was super uncomfortable. There was a international 3M executive. There was a parole and probation restructuring supervisor. So they do around the world. It's called supervision around the world, and evaluating and gaining information. And then there was a dean of a private school, and I was just thinking, you know, I'm looking at trying to figure out how I can get out of there, right? I'm like, I can feel my mouth drying up. I can feel sweat coming down my back. And I'm just thinking, I could just say I don't think this is a good fit for me. So I was looking for an opening.
So you were feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome.
Oh my goodness. Big time. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I said, nope, I'm not going to do that. I started having this internal conversation or argument actually with myself that said, no, you're not. You just soak in this discomfort, because there's no comfort in the growth zone and no growth in the comfort zone. And so we went around and they started asking questions and going over my resume with me and talking about the goals and the aims for the organization. And I said, well, here's the deal. This is the bottom line. I said, I feel called to this, and I'll share with you why I feel that God has called me here. At the end of the day, if there's another candidate that's better for you guys, then I will not feel hurt or feel like I lost out. But I do know that if I am selected, that you're going to get someone that's going to take this to the next level, and you're going to get every part of them. And as I finished up that interview, I was walking out, I heard one of them say to the other one, that was an impressive interview. Hmm. Well, I tell you, I could have been walking on air after that. I was just like, whoa, look at me. They said that by the middle of the next week, they would be reaching out to everybody to let them know, yay or nay. Of course, Monday or Tuesday wouldn't have been those days, right? And then Wednesday, which was the last day, they said that they would be letting someone know. And then finally, it was like 11 o'clock and I hadn't heard anything yet. And I'm like, well, that's because they're saving the bad news for the last, right? And I checked my email for some reason, and there was an email saying, we didn't want to do a cold call because we know you're at work. Is there a good time to talk? And I'm like, yeah, 12. We're not waiting any longer. That's a lunchtime. Well, I remember waiting for them to call, and I kept arguing back and forth as I was walking around the building waiting for this phone call, Teen Challenge. And I said, yeah, it's just not going to happen. And then all of a sudden I heard this inner Holy Spirit speaking to me saying, after all the things that I've done and shifted and moved around in your life, and you're going to question me now? And I'm just like, okay. And as soon as I said, okay, the phone rang, and not even joking. And they were offering me the job. And I remember like trying to get out the phone, and I'm just like, I'm calling my wife, and my wife said, I've been praying this whole time. And we're both crying and excited, because there's so much fear attached to climbing out of poverty, right? Because you start getting first it's your food that gets stripped away. And then it's your insurance and any assistance with daycare or any of those things. Bing, 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 and then it's all gone. And
you're on your own.
You're on your own. And and stepping away from Teen Challenge, which had become a comfort blanket for me, was another fear. And I was so, it was almost like the worst experience ever to have to print in my resume. And I remember I did it. I ended up doing it that day just to give my boss Bo enough time to take it in. But it was just like, I tried it out on a couple other people before I gave him the news.
So you didn't like gradually work out. I don't remember this personally, but did you like just give your 2 week notice and you were done at Teen Challenge, or did you like just drop hours?
No, 2 weeks.
Okay.
2 weeks and I was done because they needed me 40 to 60 hours at the new place.
Gotcha.
And so what's cool about the new place is when I started, we have what's called an advisory council, which is made up of all law enforcement leadership, county attorneys, schools, social services, you name it, they're there. And our first one was held at the local arboretum, and I got everything all prepared, but I wasn't prepared inside for what I was going to experience. In comes police chiefs and officers, same officers I've had contact with, right? Just saying. Yeah. Officers that have arrested me, and the county attorneys that have prosecuted me, and I'm just like, oh, I got to get out of here. Man, if I could just run. I felt my face blushing, and when I finished that meeting, each one of them came up and said they couldn't have thought of a better person for this job.
Wow.
And it was just like, bam.
But at first, your skin's crawling when you see these people.
You're like, I'm getting punked.
Yeah. It's just like walking into a courthouse or like you when walking into social services. It's like, it's unfamiliar to be around people wearing badges and not wanting to run or feeling like you're going to get arrested.
Yes, but then giving me positive feedback. Well, all of a sudden, I experienced what I share with anybody that's a part of my team today is that I was hired for me. There's not a part of who I am that's hidden from anyone. And so they hired me because I am me. And so with that information, I want to invite people to be a part of my team that can come as themselves. No masks, no charades, with everything and all of what you have to bring, because that's our best self. And when we get to bring our best, unique self to the table, man, amazing things can happen. And within a year, our team had doubled, our budget had tripled, and within a couple of years, it just continued to grow and transform. And in that process, we started growing and changing. And then all of a sudden I said, you know, if we really want to create change, maybe some policy change, start with some local stuff, right? So the first resolution that I did vote for our county was for Recovery Month. And the first year I got turned down, so I continued to work with it. I started building relationships with leaders in town and really just created a campaign with the newspaper. So every September, for the whole month of September, we do lived experience stories of recovery. And then last year, we were able to get the proclamation passed for Cohen County to declare September as Recovery Month. And then I'm like, well, that's not it. That's not enough. What about Second Chance Month? Because Second Chance, they're a big part of who I am, but it's also LARJP is a Second Chance organization as well. Sure. And so this last spring, we were able to get the proclamation passed to have April declared Second Chance Month for Crow Wing County. And in that, right, is I had my time in the light, but that's not where I want to be. What I want to do is I want to grow more leaders. I want to invest in our community. I want to have a restorative community. A community that welcomes conflict, that's healthy, and has a healthy way of addressing it, and where we can feel safe to be ourselves and watch our other organizations, watch our community flourish overall and our state. And it's what's exciting is when I was hired, I was told that I could grow the organization as large as I wanted. and they would provide me with the resources to do that. And there's something special to have the support of a board of directors, but also to have the support of our team, where we're all operating as a unit, right? Mm-hmm. And what was, 5 years ago, the doors were almost closed to the organization. Wow. Today we partner as Northeastern representatives of our restorative justice. We collaborate throughout the entire state with other agencies. Being invited to bring experience to different conferences to speak and share our experience, share my experience, and then to be a part of change that's been so needed for so long is something that's more rewarding than anything. Well, except watching my kids live in a home that offers encouragement and support so that they can flourish too.
Yeah. I don't think there's a better man for the job that you're doing, really. I mean, when you think about it, what you've lived, there's nobody better. You've got all that life experience. You're from the area. I mean, the passion is what sets you apart from anybody else, I bet, because you really have a vested interest in it. So, I mean, right. I think that that's all part of the story and all comes together at the end that, you know, you had to go through all of that stuff, all of those terrible things in order to get to where you are at and in order to best serve others. And that's what it comes down to, you know, and when you say, got something for nothing, all of that stuff was to get you here. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
You never know what's going to happen. So, I mean, like, yeah, it's all these difficult things that you had to do. The 36 times you tried to get a house and then you finally got one, you know, and it's like a miracle. And then you get the drug court. You know, who knows why that happened, you know, but then down the road, now you're giving back and you're working with the same people that you were running from.
Yes. Yeah. I even had one of the task force agents was one of my board members for a period of time.
There you go.
You know, you walk it out and you think, you know what? I've gotten to experience the best of community in the last almost 10 years. And I want number one, I bring all my experiences, you know, like the best parts of drug court I've integrated into the work that I'm doing today. The best parts of coalitions I've integrated. The experiences that helped me launch, I've integrated. And the best thing is that I manage from within. I don't manage from above.
Yeah, there you go.
And I want to have the eyes of everyone to be able to do the best work in the community. And we have to have everyone's perspective in order to create positive change. And that's what I've been able to, if I get credit for anything with the organization, it's that I've cultivated the community within the organization that empowers and inspires people to be everything that they can be.
That's awesome.
This is just a lot. And I just keep thinking at one point here towards the end, you know, you were just talking about just obviously all of this. And I just had that picture in my mind of your son saying, when's the check going to be here? Or did it come or whatever or it came? And just the difference in not only your life and the lives of those you work with and work for and have dedicated your life to, but your kids, like the impact on them, whether it's intentional or not, and just what they've absorbed and, you know, seen and felt, and then the impact they are able to now bring to the world based on what their experiences have been, and just how it's exponential and how it just rolls down the hill in ways that, you know, you get feedback, but in other ways, you'll never, ever know. And that's just amazing.
And I'll tell you what, Brian, when you think about it, I mean, you've been in, you were a recovery coach, so you've heard all the stories, and I've been in quite a few treatments. But there's so many guys that are, and women, that say, I'm too far gone. I've done too yeah. much damage. I lost my kids. So many times I've heard that said is that they've lost their kids and they know they're never going to get them back. Well, that's where your story comes in. That's where I hope people listen to your episodes and say, I'm not done, you know, because you that's said right. you weren't done. And, yep. and that's the message of hope that people that are in early recovery or in late addiction are looking for. I remember when I got into early recovery, I was looking for signs of hope, because if there wasn't, what was the purpose? So the more signs of hope out there, the better chances that people are going to strive for recovery. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
And so that's why I'm just so proud of you for what you have done, what you have accomplished. And really, you know, in actuality, it's a short period of time when you think about it.
It is a short period of time.
If you look
that's my employment, but all the volunteering and group leading in the church ended up leading to, you know, I thought I'd start on fire when I walked through the doors of the, 10 years ago. Right.
Lightning strike.
But I got not only elected to serve a term as a deacon there, but I'm currently serving a second term of a deacon in the church. And I remember when I got elected, I made a sign because I'm going to write a book someday in my spare time. Yeah. But it says, from drug dealer to deacon. That's a story of inspiration and transformation.
That's awesome.
And you know, and we look at that and we're like, okay. And I had one dream that I had in over my life that I'd let go of. And last spring I grabbed back a hold of it, and it was to get my degree. And I had dropped out of school right before I'd relapsed in 2008, 2009. And because I couldn't do it all, because I stopped doing everything that was healthy for me, right? And one of those things was I dropped out of school. I went from making the National Honor Society and the National Dean's List to dropping out. And I didn't even realize that I only had a little over a year to go to get my bachelor's degree. And so I switched majors. I said, what would be a good direction for me now? Because my first 3 years of school were pursuing a degree in business management with emphasis in sales and marketing. Because I thought, well, you know, maybe I was selling the wrong product. But I started thinking, you know what, maybe either human services or criminal justice. And I think there's a lot of room for a lot of change in the field that I'm in. Specifically all of the justice system, right? But how can I speak to the people that I can't speak to today? And way that I can do that is by having a degree that opens that communication line up. And so I'm pursuing a degree my final year in a degree for criminal justice leadership and management.
Wow.
That's and awesome. And I got a rejection email at the beginning. Said I was disqualified. Well, one thing about building a network, listeners, a network of supporters and people to have alongside you is that when things like that happen, you've got people that have your back. And so I had all the letters I needed within one day.
That's right.
People who supported me and who could speak the truth of transformation and change.
Right.
And the school wrote me a letter back that said, yeah, you've received a set aside and we'd like to welcome you to complete your degree. But it's that, you know, the first class that I had talked about a guy who started his his degree while he was incarcerated in prison for criminal justice. And then he got out and he finished his degree. But now all of a sudden I'm in a college that is telling me that I'm not incarcerated right now, but I have been. But you can't get your degree. And now it's just like, so there's lots of room for positive change and impact. We got to all bring that experience forward because each experience, whether it's from the person who's lived it or a family member who has lived it. right. with loved ones.
Stories need to be told.
Well, and, yeah. you know, with that, it's just, like you said, like, you can't give up. Like, you could have gotten that rejection and said, well, see, I'm defeated. But it's taking the 35 no's to housing and going out the 36th time. You know, it's no, I don't like your rejection of me coming and getting my degree. Let me show you more. And it's, is it right that you have to go through that? No, you know, and that's where there needs to be a lot of change. So you don't have to go through those extra steps, but right. you're just another beacon to show that if you take that extra step and take that rejection as motivation,
that's right.
It can there come it out the other way.
You're the deacon.
You know, yes. You know, that square peg, square hole, round hole, whatever you want to say, I challenge that. So I heard about Chasing Failure. I think there's a book out there, too, called Chasing Failure. I came up with this idea of chasing failure back when I started pursuing all of these different things, right? Every time I tried to get a place and it failed. But I didn't stop. When I went to go after this position, even though I didn't fit all the little, you know, I didn't have my, I couldn't cross the line through each one of the requirements, I still went for it. Mm-hmm. I was at a prevention conference, and there was a speaker that talked about this resiliency program. His name is Dr. Amit Sood, and from Mayo. And I'm like, man, that would be beneficial to get trained as a trainer of that. And so literally I finish up the conference and I shoot him an email and I said, hey, here's the, first I looked at the requirements and it was, you need to have a bachelor's degree or a master's degree and you're going to have this and you're going to have that. And I'm just like, wah, wah, wah. I'm going to send him a letter anyway. And, each time we get rejected and we have a success or a win after that, it really helps us grow more confident and believe that, you know, that no's don't always mean no. And no means sometimes later, right? And so I sent Dr. Mitsu an email sharing about who I am, sharing my history and why I wanted to be trained in this program. And I was replied with, we'd love to have you. And not only have you, but we'll offer you a scholarship too.
Wow.
And so I got a 50% scholarship of this very, it wasn't a cheap program, but it was an extremely helpful information that I use today. And I've taught men in our community, in our region also. And it was one more reason for me to believe that, if just because they have it listed on there as a requirement doesn't mean that it's set in stone.
Right.
And if you feel a calling to it, right, if you're feeling this nudging or this, it's giving you a little more than just interest, then I want to encourage you to chase it down. Yeah. Chase it down. And, you know, like one of those motivational videos I played back at Teen Challenge, a guy said, I'd rather aim high and miss than aim low and hit.
Right.
And then that's the way I live my life. I'm going to aim high every time. It doesn't matter if I miss. It's about making sure that I'm aiming high.
Right. That's an amazing story, Brian. I'm blown away, you know, through all this. And I even knew you before. So I've gotten so much more information and got caught up in your life. And I hope the listeners now are caught up in your life. And, you know, We are going to wrap this up, but, you know, I do want to say that there are future topics that I'm sure that you're going to be able to come on and you know, give your expertise on them. And, you know, I'm sure that the listeners will want to have you on as a reoccurring guest.
Yeah.
So,
well, it would be a privilege and an honor.
Yeah. One of these days you're going to be on more than we are.
Right. Right.
Oh boy.
Do you have any last words, Brian? Anything to promote, well, like your lakes area, or just?
Well, I don't need to promote that. What I'd like to do is I'd like to promote this, and just say, you know, at the beginning of every one of the shows, they've asked you if you haven't already liked or shared or made a positive comment or done a review. I want to encourage you to do that, because just in the short time that I've been involved in this and the number of people who have reported back to me, what an impact they've had on it, not just from my stories, right, but the stories of the other episodes that Josh and Heather have done here in this podcast. So I really, this is a unsolicited request to make sure you make that mark. Yeah, and and the four stars don't work, just the fifth one does.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we really appreciate that, Brian, and we really appreciate your involvement in this. I know that you've brought a lot of listeners onto our podcast. So,
and in the podcast notes, I will put the link to the Lakes Area Restorative Justice Program, because I think it's just such a good, amazing program that, you know, more than just the Brainerd Lakes need to have. So people can go check that out as well.
Awesome. Appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Brian. God bless you. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yes. Thank you guys very much.
Working together, we can move addiction to recovery.
If you would be so kind, please go to wherever you listen to your podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating, possibly a comment, but for sure click to follow us so you never miss an episode. Most importantly, don't forget to share our episode with a friend.
And as always, if you would like to ask us a question, have a topic recommendation, or would even want to be a guest on our show, email us at addiction2recoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's addiction2recoverypodcast@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter at A2RPodcast or on Facebook or Instagram at addiction2recoverypodcast.